Welcome to the O Woman Podcast, where we discuss so many things related to women's sexuality, bodies, thoughts, and lives. We'll talk about everything from our relationships to our orgasms to our children and our ovaries. And we'll share outstanding experiences and ordinary ones. I'm Emma, and a big open welcome to you. Thanks for joining me for the show today. This is episode 72 of the O Woman Podcast. And today, we're continuing the series that started yesterday, a series called Your Sexual History, which, if you listened to the show yesterday, you already know that it's going to be a running series, maybe 7-8 episodes, potentially all in a row. Potentially, I'll add a couple episodes that are different in there to kind of break up the flow. But that all have to do with your sexual history, the history that you and those around you have written for yourself. And you can look back and you can remember things about your experiences with body image and sexuality and who you're attracted to and sexual experiences and think about what that means for you today. So I wanted to talk about some of the dark sides and some of the really light, nice sides to your sexual history. Yesterday we talked about how your parents and your family shape you, how they have such a great influence over your idea of your sexuality, your sexual worth, and what sort of pride or fear or shame you should have involving that. And today I want to talk about how your body image shapes you. So that's what the show is going to be about today. I talked a little bit about this yesterday when I was talking about the psychologist named Pamela Madsen. If you remember, I told a story about how her mother wounded her when she was a young girl by something that she said, and her mother, you know, wasn't meaning to scar her, but it really affected her and hurt her feelings and made her feel disassociated from her body. And then as she grew older, she could look back and think of this thing that her mother said that hurt her feelings. If you want to know what that is, check out the episode from yesterday. That made her feel like she wasn't going to be good enough, or her body wasn't good enough, to be sexy, to be, the kind of person that she was. So she talks about this wound, and other wounds similar to it. Many of us have wounds in our past that we can think about that have been hard on us. Maybe they're self-inflicted. Maybe they're, integrated into our understanding of ourselves via what other people have said about us or to us or what we know they think about us. But she calls them core erotic wounds, and I think it's a really good idea. One thing to note, in this kind of phrase, the core erotic wounds, it means that there's some sort of wound in your erotic life or your erotic understanding of yourself, but it doesn't mean that this wound happened during an erotic scenario. Like Pamela Madsen mentioned, hers didn't happen during an erotic scenario. It just happened like during a family setting, but it was something that her mother said to her that reflected on and touched on her pre-sexuality as a young girl, and she could connect the dots and it hurt her. So, of course, then the first thing to touch on when you're thinking about how your body image shapes you is going to be how your parents and other family members kind of act as a mirror for you when you're young, before you are able to do a lot of self-reflection and think about yourself as yourself and try to ignore a lot of the other ideas that are bombarding you throughout the day about what you are and what you look like. But a lot of the first body image information you get is from your parents and your family. I know my mom was told by her mother when she was growing up that she was a little too chubby or too this or too big boned and was, you know, made to feel ashamed of that. And that affected her body image. It affected her body image her whole life. Now, that isn't necessarily, that wasn't said to her during an erotic situation, obviously. It was just said to her in passing many days throughout, you know, the year. Something about, oh, are you going to eat that? Oh, are you going to do that? Are you going to wear that? You know, that kind of thing. That is obvious. The way it makes you feel is obvious. It makes you think, oh, I shouldn't eat that. I'm already too fat. Or, oh, I shouldn't wear this. I don't look good in it. Which is a hurtful, hurtful thing. And it takes a lot to overcome that kind of feeling that a parent or a close family member can make you feel. But obviously, that didn't happen during an erotic situation. It just happened in regular life. So these core erotic wounds can come up at any time. So as a parent, you have to be really careful of what you say and how you say it. Everybody makes mistakes. You could say something weird and then think, crap, why did I say that? But a lot of the stuff that can become a wound over time is stuff that is repeated, is the concept that my mother heard over and over, you're too chubby, through different outlets. Are you going to eat that? Are you going to wear that? You know, that's reinforcing that idea to her over and over. It wasn't a one-time sentence that then, you know, her mom said, oh, sorry, I didn't mean to say that. I'm just thinking blah, blah, blah. I'm sorry. It wasn't like that. It was kind of re-ingrained over and over in her mind. And whether parents know it or not, or whether family members know it or not, they're constantly creating your idea of body image. Because like I said before, when you're younger, you don't know what you're supposed to look like or who you're supposed to, you know, what you're supposed to be like. You just are kind of who you are, especially the way you look when you're a kid. Your body just forms the way it's going to form. You're not concerned as much about fashion, you know, and looking pretty or fat or whatever in something. You just wear something because you think it's pretty, and that's it. You're not worried about the way you're shaped or anything like that. But family can subconsciously, without meaning to hurt you, make you feel like you're not good enough, or make you feel like you are good enough, like your body is good enough. For example, because my mom had such negative feelings about her body image when she was younger, she realized when she got older that it was something that she had to overcome on her own and stop listening to those negative comments coming at her. And I it's amazing. I respect her for that. It's really hard to ignore the core kind of value system that your family tries to hand you when those are the people that you love most in the world. It's hard to distance yourself from that. But because of that, I was growing up, she said that on multiple occasions, she, in her mind, tried really hard never to say anything like that. But she had to actively try because she thought some things like that, but she didn't want to say them. She didn't want to say, are you going to wear that? Because she knew what it made her feel like when that was said to her. So sometimes you can go the opposite way, and you can really try really hard to make it a positive experience for your children. And I think this is super important now more than ever, but just as always, making sure that girls especially have a positive body image. They're, you know, increased anorexia and bulimia and just eating disorders and ideas about what your body is supposed to look like and what you're supposed to be pretty, how hypersexual or not you're supposed to be, the peer pressure that goes with that. There's a lot to be said for simple, basic, not even explicitly stating what you think, but implying to your children from both mothers and fathers and people in that child's life that they're good enough the way they are. Telling them, if they're a girl, not just that they look pretty, but that they look strong and fantastic. And I think I've mentioned before in a past episode that that's something that is a lot of what is my concept of womanhood, is strength. That's one of the first things my dad ever would say to me when I get dressed up to go to prom or whatever. He would say, you look beautiful or you look lovely, but he would say, sometimes before, sometimes after, you look really strong, which to me is such a powerful thing to say, even more powerful than you look pretty or beautiful. Beautiful is more appealing to me than pretty, because pretty sounds a little bit girlish, but beautiful can be anyone, anything, any shape that is at its ideal. I think that's something that was really positive for me to hear. And that came from my dad knowing that he needed to be careful with body image stuff with women because of having talked to my mother about it and how that's such a big deal. And then it came from my mother knowing what it was like to feel put down and feel like your body isn't what it's supposed to be. So if you feel that way, if you feel like you're not good enough physically, how does that necessarily connect with not being, not feeling confident sexually either? And the reason that doesn't make that connection, I also talked about this yesterday, the theories from same psychologist, Pamela Mattson, she kind of touches on this. But if you're not aligned with your body image, you're not aligned with your sexuality because there's some sort of break in your understanding, your animal and human understanding in your mind of how those two things connect. You can be maybe even okay with your body image, like I've said before, but when it comes to sexuality, you can't connect your body image to your sexual self because there's some sort of schism that's going on between those concepts, those ideas about what you are and how, and if you're beautiful all the way, or if you're beautiful just enough, you know, not in a sexual setting. Peers are another huge way that your body image can become shaped. And it's interesting because as, you know, when you spend time with your peers, especially as you're reaching adolescence and you're a young, you know, girl, kid, person, you're a part of that peer group. So you're influencing it while it's influencing you, just like, you know, with your family, but it's different when it's your own age group. You kind of co-create thoughts and co-create ideas together. So that's why when you look back and you think about your friends and you think about the way your parents or your family members thought, oh, don't hang out with that friend, they're a bad seed kind of thing. In some cases, you realize how important it is to choose good friends. Maybe they act out, maybe they do crazy stuff, but what I mean by good friends is someone who actually helps grow values in you and you help grow values in them that are valuable and good values, that they value themselves, they value other people, they're caring, kind other people. And they can be goof-offs in school, and they can never do their homework, but that doesn't have to do with that character thing, that learning how to be a good person, learning how to be respectful and kind of other people. But as a peer, you're influencing others that are in your group too. So that's why, in my opinion, peer relationships can be really intense and extreme, and the peer pressure that comes from that during that time period. Because one person in the group gets an idea in their mind that, oh, this sort of skinny weight is the best. Then, depending on how interested or not the other girls in that group are, it could be pretty easy for everybody in that group to jump on that idea with 2 feet and think, oh, yeah, you're right. And then they kind of feed off of each other and grow each other's ideas about what your body's supposed to look like. It's kind of almost like an interesting working business relationship. If you have a really symbiotic business relationship where you do a lot of creative marketing or creative programming or creative whatever, you kind of work together in this really cool symbiotic way and grow these fantastic ideas, and they just build and build and build on each other and they become exponentially more fantastic. It's that same concept, but it can happen. It can definitely happen from a negative standpoint too, because one idea can just, you know, kind of theoretically run wild in the mind of a peer group, especially peer groups who are, you know, teenagers and impressionable and still learning how they're supposed to be a person, you know, deciding how they're supposed to be a person. So you can really influence each other that way. So if you look back and you think about the kind of friends that you had when you were younger, it's really a valuable thing for you to think about how they might have influenced you. I can look back and I can think of friends that I've had that if I had spent a lot of time with them, if they had been my best friends, I would have a different idea of what sexuality should be. Maybe because they had some sort of erotic wounds that made them a lot more willing to have sex with whoever, or, you know, and not care about the other person caring for them in the process when they're teenagers, you know, that kind of thing. But as it happens, the friend group that I was around didn't have a lot of the, I guess they didn't have a lot of core erotic wounds that made them worry about that a lot, think about sexuality and trying to prove themselves in a sexual way. That wasn't really on my peer group's agenda, which I think was such a great benefit to me. So I didn't worry so much about sex, except talking about how great it would be eventually, and I was able to worry more about other things. But that's something that when you're thinking of your sexual history and you're looking back, thinking of the peer groups that you used to have and that you have now, it's going to really help you identify maybe where some of your core erotic wounds are. Or are these peer groups actually nurturing them and helping them heal, or are they keeping the wound open? Are they scratching it over and over again? So if you are in a group of friends now, of, you know, group of women friends that you've recently had kids, and a lot of the common discourse is discussing how gross you feel about your body, it's okay to feel how you want to feel, but if that becomes a topic of conversation on a regular occasion, think about how that's affecting your idea of your post-baby body, your post-baby self. Is that scratching a wound that you have that is a discussion of how gross you feel? Or is it helping you heal? It's probably not helping you heal. Surrounding yourselves with positive images of what women are supposed to look like after they have children. And I have a really cool link on the Bodies and Self-Esteem Resources tab on my page that is a really great photo gallery of women after they've had children, what they look like. They're wrinkly. They have stretch marks. I mean, come on. That's the way you're supposed to look. your body did some epic chameleon-like transformation, and it's not going to heal immediately, and it might not heal ever, but the point isn't to go back to the way it was before. Your life's never going to be the same. Your body adapts. You just take care of yourself and are healthy, and you're beautiful anyway. But are the people that you're around right now kind of working towards that goal together, or are they focusing on the negatives? So think about your peer group, now and in the past. Another thing that really shapes your idea of your own body image and how that really affects your sexual ideas about yourself too is how connected do you feel to your body? And a lot of this has to do with how many coarse sexual and erotic wounds have you already sustained? Have there been a lot of feelings of someone making you feel too fat or too ugly or too this or too that already, where you have, in learning to cope with that, have separated out your ideas of yourself, the intellectual, emotional side of yourself? How have you separated that out from your physical and sexual self? I think that's something that can happen with women, because of course you are want to be innately valuable, and you are innately valuable, and you want to think of yourself as a good, great person who's fantastic in lots of ways. But for someone who's already been scarred in thinking about their physicality and their sexuality and thinking, oh, actually deep down I don't feel pretty, I don't feel attractive or sexy or beautiful or strong or any of those things, how many people might separate that concept of themselves, the sexual, physical side, because they don't feel like it's pretty, from the rest of them? Think, that's not really part of me. I'm going to ignore that part of me. I'm going to focus on the part that is valuable, which is a good tactic at first, but you can't ignore the other part of you that's still literally ingrained in who you are. Your physical self is a vehicle and a part of who you are at the same time. So just because you're not comfortable with that part doesn't mean you can push it under the rug and focus only on the other traits that you deem valuable. And doing that actually causes that disassociation with your body. Do you feel comfortable with your body? Think about it in this way. Ask yourself, do I feel comfortable naked? Naked time is a super great thing to do. I've talked about it in other episodes. I feel like it's like the single best way to start healing from any situation. From any situation, whether it's a physical one or a sexual one or an emotional one or a psychological one, is by yourself hanging out naked. Because whether you like it or not, you're going to have to start reconnecting to your body, because you see it, you get used to it. You absorb that it is actually very beautiful. Just like if you watch really horrible, scary, stressful, tense, evil people movies all the time, you're going to have that embedded in your idea of the world just a little bit, and you're not going to be able to control feeling a little nervous or worried or freaked out or drawing weird connections between things. So you surround yourself with your body. Eventually, you're going to realize that's my body, and you're going to integrate that into your personality again. But make sure you're doing naked time in a safe space, you know, in a way that seems healthy and good to you. But I think avoiding it, and if you avoid it on purpose, that means you probably need to do it more than people that don't avoid it on purpose, because you need that time to have faith and think about your body and focus on your body in a setting where you feel comfortable, or at least eventually will feel comfortable. Another huge pressure on everyone, and of course particularly women, is about body image is society, obviously, which then becomes reiterated through the way peers talk about their body and act about their body, the way family treats women and their bodies. But just on a larger scale, think about how society views bodies. The day and age that we're in, what is the ideal beautiful body right now? It's still really thin, really white, and at this point, a little bit athletic. You have a healthy glow, but you're still skinny, you know, that kind of idea. So society tells you that, and actually, in order to be sexy, you have to look like that. But everybody else in the world is sexy, even if they don't look like that. And the majority of women do not look like that. And we don't consciously think that. We would never say that out loud. No matter who you are, you wouldn't say, I have to be 110 pounds and this tall and this blah, 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 blah to be sexy. Because you realize when you say it, it's absurd. It doesn't make any sense. First of all, you're not genetically born to be that way. Most people are not. You're going to be shorter or chubbier or bigger boned or a different complexion or any of these things. You're going to be something that isn't that. Everybody's going to be something that isn't that. Even the models themselves, because in most cases they're airbrushed to look like not themselves. So first, you're going to first of all think, That doesn't make any sense. I can't say that because I know I could never achieve that. And then most other things that you could say out loud about what you're supposed to look like and what you're supposed to be are going to be more subtle. They're going to be like, I wish I could lose weight, or I'm trying to lose weight, or this and this and this. And a lot of those things are said almost apologetically. Think about how you talk about your body around other people. Do you say sentences that are sort of apologetic? Or you look to the other person, your partner, your friends, people around you at work, to see if they go, oh, therefore it's okay. Like, you tell your coworkers, oh, I can't have the cookies, I'm trying to lose weight right now. Do they respond and go, oh, okay, that makes sense? And does that make you feel, oh, great, okay, they're cool with me because of that. I know that they're accepting of me because maybe they don't like my size now, but because I'm telling them that I'm trying to be better, they don't think I'm lazy or ugly or whatever. They think I'm trying to get better, trying to reach the ideal. I mean, do you feel like that? Do you think like that? If you do, that's something to look into with yourself and think about. But most ways that society is actually such a burden, such a pressure on our image, body image, is through subtle ways. Is through, a lot of it is through movies and TV and billboards and the internet and things like that. Think about how many normal-sized women play leading roles in movies. How many women who are not the most beautiful, fantastical Jennifer Lopez, Kate Upton people that play leading characters? Not very many women. Usually these are more indie films or independent films where women that are average, beautiful women play things like that, you know, or play those characters like that show Girls. The main characters are all kind of beautiful but normal-looking girls. They're from an average, you know, kind of, you know, slice of the population. And that's why Girls has been so popular, because it shows kind of the nitty-gritty relationship stuff with women, but then also it shows women just being normal size, being themselves, being goofy, being whatever, you know. And then think how many women who are 50 plus play leading characters, leading roles in films and are considered sexy. How many women, in that case with wrinkles, because some of the women that are 50 plus that get to play leading roles don't have any wrinkles, so they don't even look like they're 50. And that's the point, is you can play a leading character if you're not wrinkly, if you're a young 50. But what about a regular 50-year-old? Like almost everybody ever. Allowing those women to play lead roles, that doesn't really happen that much. It's becoming more popular. I feel like I've noticed in the past decade, it's been more common for normal looking people who are beautiful, but normal, average, you know, to be main characters and to be considered, the sexy ideal and the one that is the hero of the story, you know, that kind of thing. And so of course, subconsciously, this is going to affect our idea of what you have to be sexy. If we saw more average-sized women being considered attractive by people on TV or being considered sexy or having sex on TV, then we would think, I'm sexy too. They can have sex when they're a size 16. Why can't I? Duh, you can, because you're beautiful already. But it's just hard to connect those dots. It's unfortunate that it is. But when you see so many things that don't reflect you, you start to think that you're not quite right. And it makes you feel disconnected from your body, because you know you have a winning personality, but you want to believe that you have a winning body, but if it doesn't reflect what you see around you, then you get worried that it's not a winning body. And so you disconnect it sometimes from who you are and from the way you deal with, you know, your sexuality and stuff too. Another huge thing that has a really great impact on body image, which is looking more at the positive side of things, is seeing healthy relationships around, like being surrounded by healthy relationships where the people have healthy bodies in them. Normal sized, normal colored, which means all colors. Normal size, which means all sizes. You know, a wide variety and range of people and sexualities and personalities and interests and colors and sizes and ethnicities, all sorts of things. Seeing a wide variety of relationships around you that are healthy and that work, where the people actually value each other and think each other are beautiful. That is going to be such a positive influence over you, because just like seeing things that are not reflective of you, like a skinny, skinny, skinny girl who's wearing sexy lingerie, making you think, is that the way I'm supposed to look? If you see it all the time, the positive stuff around you, you're going to realize it's just going to be an effortless transition from you feeling disconnected from your body to you feeling like your body is valuable, because you see others around you loving people that look just like you, loving people that sometimes in your case you think, hey, I look better than her. And that's okay to think that, as long as you're not saying it. That's okay to think that, and then more power to you. If you feel like I'm the sexiest lady ever, good for you. You should feel like that, because you're the main character of your own life. Why should you not be the lead character, the one that everybody thinks is the most sexy, at least from the people that you choose in your life? They should think you're the most sexy if you're with them, if they're your partner. And then also the emphasis that we have in our society and in different parts of the world, where the emphasis isn't on internal health and overall physical health. The emphasis is on the way you physically look, which is almost never related on a size scale. Well, it is sometimes, but not often. It's not often related to your actual health. I was reading a book about healthy pregnancy weight gain the other day, and it was talking about the woman. It was a very natural approach to it, eating healthy, using herbs, doing things very naturally, taking really good care of yourself. How she doesn't talk about how many pounds you're supposed to gain during pregnancy. There's like a minimum that's like way too low no matter what, and there's an amount that's way too high no matter what. But there's a huge range in the middle of how much you're supposed to gain during pregnancy. And the reason she doesn't say what you should gain is because you can gain that much weight when you're pregnant eating shit, which is not a benefit to your body or your baby or your health at all. It shouldn't be a pound amount. It should be what you're putting in your body, what you're getting out of your body. So are you healthy? Can you exercise? Can you work? Can you think? Are you happy? Do you feel chemically balanced in your mind? Do you feel connected with your body and your brain and your creativity? All of these things, when we start to value that more than just the general physical appearance that nobody really ever sees, just that part of us in real life anyway, except just random strangers. And why do we care what they think anyway? When we start to focus and think more about the value of all the other 8 million layers of our humanity, then this body image is usually going to be more positive. It's going to be our physical self is still ourselves, but if we have cellulite, we're not going to freak out because we're like, it's part of me, and I don't even consider cellulite ugly. And almost everybody has cellulite. I remember when I first started getting cellulite when I was, 8th or 9th grade. I remember noticing it at the beach when I went with my family for the yearly beach trip. And I remember being literally horrified. And I thought before that time, maybe somehow that I would always be what I consider to be beautiful forever. And I have a fine body image now. You know, some days everybody goes, ugh, I don't look good. But that's kind of normal, fluctuating, you know, to have weird days with yourself. But overall, I feel like I have a pretty good body image. And I'm glad for that. But at the time I thought, I thought I would be, you know, perfect bodied or whatever the hell I thought forever. And now I'm getting cellulite. I was like, how can this have happened to me? Like, I thought I would be beautiful. And then I was like, wait a minute. I am beautiful. It just happened to me because it's a part of growing up. But it took me years to actually get past that. And I didn't think about it much unless it was bathing suit season, but it took me years to get past that. And at first when I had a teeny bit of cellulite, barely, I remember when I was at the beach, I would come in from being at the beach and I would do all these like squats and sit-ups and leg lifts just to try to get it to go away. Like, you can't make cellulite go away like that. It doesn't work like that. But I thought that it meant that I was somehow not pretty anymore. And that never came from my mom and my dad. I know that it didn't. It never came from my friends. That I know of, because I feel like we would have cellulite discussions, but that was later in high school when we got older. It came from society, the concept of what cellulite is and what's pretty and what's not. And so as hard as you try to, you know, think of positive things and remind yourself that you are beautiful, there's all these things that influence you and affect you. And it's worth thinking about how this has affected your sexual history and your life and your feelings about yourself and how comfortable you are being sexual. And feeling like you're exposed in that sexual way where your skin folds or skin fat wrinkles up when you're having sex. Are you worried about that? You know, if you are, most people are. But it's sad that most people are. Why should we be worried about that? It's impossible not to bend over and have a skin wrinkle. That would be like like mutant bodies. Men can't even do that. They just have a different shape of stomach than we do. It's just so weird that we're worried about it. That's kind of a tangent. But another thing too that can be really a huge influence over body image is a change in your body, like kind of a drastic change, like after you have a baby, like I gave that example earlier, or after you have a baby but also have a really intense abdominal surgery associated with it, so like a C-section, so you have a scar too, and then you had a baby and your body is changed. Or if you've had breast cancer and you've had different things happen with your boobs, or drastic weight loss or weight gain, all those things can affect your body image. And I think one of the greatest things to do is look around and try to give yourself good images. Watch things that reinforce that your body is the way it's supposed to be. Watch things that reinforce that you're healthy. If you feel like you're healthy, but you are 20 pounds heavier than you wish, but you're still being healthy, it sounds like to me you're pretty good. You don't need to do anything. Just keep on eating, keep on exercising, keep on living. That's what it sounds like to me. That you need to change your idea of what your body should look like, not change your body. I found a really cool website, this is the last thing I'm going to say today, that was just a little brief article. I think it could have been on MSN, it could have been on Yahoo, one of those. But it was 5 tips to improve your body image and your sex life. See how integrally these things are related when people talk about them. They're so related. The first one was focus on what you like about yourself, which is a huge big deal. Usually when we're stressed out about our body image, we focus on the one thing we don't like. For example, my cellulite. Be like, oh, my ass is fat. Oh, I have 800 other things on my body that I really like. So why don't I focus on that? I have strong arms. I really like my ass. It's huge and awesome. I have a really nice back. I like my boobs. You know, whatever. Focus on the things you like. The second thing is, notice all the bodies around you. Like, take the time to look. This is kind of like surrounding yourself with positive body image. But look around you and see all these other bodies that are around you and think, oh, that person's beautiful. Oh, wait a minute. She's chubby, if theoretically, but I think she's beautiful. Wait a minute. Of course I'm beautiful too. I think she's beautiful for a lot of reasons beyond exactly her size, of course. The third thing they said was exercising. And this doesn't mean exercising to lose weight, unless you think you're unhealthy and you need to. This is exercising because it gets your body working. It gets your blood pumping. It cuts on a lot of those hormones in your body that makes you feel satisfied and content. It makes you feel capable and strong. And that's really the best thing that you can feel when you're trying to get reconnected with your body, is that. I know that after I exercise, whether I actually do anything for my body or just feel like I have, I look in the mirror and I think, man, you look great, because my image has changed, because I feel so productive and so capable and so strong. The fourth thing they say to do is look at your whole body. Don't just look at like the part that you don't like. Don't like look in one of those little teeny mirrors and zoom in. Look, like step back and look at the way your whole body is shaped. It's shaped well. Otherwise you would not walk or move or be able to do anything. It's shaped the way it's supposed to be shaped. So stop hating on this one little part. If you could pick stuff out of every experience in your entire life, your marriage, your children, your wedding, your job, your family, there's a lot of things you could pick out that are annoying, stupid things. But the majority of them are fantastic things. And that's the same thing with your body. And then the last thing they said was, change your thoughts. Stop trying to change your body. Start trying to change your thoughts about what you think is beautiful. And so once you've actually looked at how your body image is, what it is, how it affects you, how you think it probably affects how comfortable you are with yourself, how confident your ideas of self-worth, that's when you can start thinking about, hey, what's the best way that I could reroute what I believe about myself to reflect me being the ideal beautiful person? Thank you so much for listening to the show today. As always, I love talking with you guys. Just a quick reminder to check out the Facebook page, A Woman Podcast. Subscribe on iTunes and please rank the episodes. And check out the website. You can check out past episodes on the episode archives tab. And like I mentioned in this episode and in episodes past, there's resources. So resources on sexuality, on bodies and self-esteem, on pregnancy and birth. You can click on those and get a little bit more information if you're interested, or find some of the links to some of the articles I've talked about on episodes. Thanks so much for listening, and I can't wait to talk to you tomorrow. Okay, bye.